Chad and his friend Kate just spent 3 weeks, maybe 22 days, in Maui, where we live in Hawaii. And Chad wants to report. We've done two reports already about two different excursions to different restaurants. The third, we went to a different restaurant this time, but there's other things that happened to Chad. For example, how Chad got two or three or whatever extra days on his vacation. How did that happen, Chad?
So on Friday night, we were supposed to leave. We had dinner with you on you and Carolyn Thursday night.
Yeah, last Thursday.
And then Friday night. Yeah, when we went out for dinner, like, my energy was really low and I couldn't eat because I had some kind of food poisoning from somewhere earlier that week. So I didn't get to eat at the dinner. And the following night, like, I was still feeling like crap. So I wasn't up for making a huge flight from Hawaii to the mainland and then connecting to go up to Vancouver. So midway in the afternoon on Friday before our flight, I called the airline and I asked if they could move our flight to Sunday, just to get a couple extra days. And they basically wanted us to buy new tickets. Like, the price was the same as buying new tickets. So I was like, forget it. I'll just brave through the flight. So we got packed and we left and we drove up to Kahului to get to the airport. And we had to make a stop and we made the stop. And then I got a text message from the airline and they said that the flight was delayed 3 hours. The flight was supposed to leave at 9 p.m. and they delayed it. It wasn't supposed to leave till midnight. We'd already checked out of our accommodations, so we basically would have had an extra 3 hours of time to kill, and I really wasn't up for it. So I called the airline and just asked, like, what other options do we have? And they said there's another one leaving, like, later. Or no, there's another one leaving the next day or something like that. And I said, why don't you just move my flight to Sunday? And they said, okay. So they moved the flight. They were looking at different times and stuff. And I said, just give me the latest one on Sunday night. And they gave me the latest one. And they said, okay, we only, to fit both of you and Kate, we have to put you up in first class. So it's the only place that has seats left. Will you take it? And I'm like, yeah. So they put us in first class. And the flight number for this flight was 222.
Wow.
Or no, 2-2-2.
Didn't know that.
2-2. It's 2-2-2-2. Yeah.
4-2s. 4-2s.
4-2s, yeah. 4-2s,
wow.
Leaving at 11 o'clock. Yeah. So instead of our 22-day trip, we end up having a 24-day trip. And we were so excited that that happened. And I called the landlord that we stayed with. And the place just happened to be available for another couple days, so we booked that. And yeah, we got to stay a couple of extra days, but something intervened there because earlier in the day on Friday, it just wasn't lining up.
Yeah.
And then by some miracle, the plane was delayed 3 hours. And like Carolyn said, that's really unusual for them to say in advance that the flight is delayed. Because I got the notification at like 4 o'clock or something. So there were still 5 hours until the plane was supposed to leave.
Hmm.
So it was all kind of mysterious.
Now, Anita, if Ian was here, we would say, did you have something to do with that? And Ian would go, duh. You know that teenage expression, duh. They'd go, duh, and would claim it did everything, give Chad a tip or something, a break. But we don't know what this Ian is. It could be a big lie. So we do it with... what do we do it? We do it with jaundiced eye. We accept Ian with a get along to go along attitude. Listen, I want to say to everybody, looking at the Game of Thrones, now the character that's based on Carolyn, this is what we say, Anita, we're megalomaniacs, we see all kinds of TV shows echoing us, and Ian claims that they're causing that. So, the Game of Thrones features this pretty blonde lady, white-haired lady, who's the magician, an incredible ancient performer and leader and kind of like a saint. And she wowed everybody at the beginning of the series a few years ago because she could talk to these dragons, these three dragons. As they were young dragons, they were growing, so they hung around with her. So that was pretty charismatic. Well, they disappeared recently, like in the last season, and we didn't know what she was going to do without them. She couldn't be as powerful. Well, all along the last few years, I've been saying that Ion is a pterodactyl, which is a kind of flying dragon, flying dinosaur. And so in this episode last Sunday, she finally, they're going walking along in the wilderness, getting ready to take over the Seven Kingdoms, but she doesn't really have the dragons, apparently. But then she notices something weird happening in the valley, so she leaves the gang and goes forward. And then we wait, and the soldiers and people are getting impatient. All of a sudden, this huge shadow goes over the whole gang in the valley. And then the shadow sweeps around, and eventually you see it's a huge, huge dragon. Seems to me way bigger than what it was last season. And, of course, there's the little heroine or goddess, very tiny, sitting on its neck and riding it. So she comes in, and she declares to everybody, this is the first time where she really gets angry or aggressive, and she says, "Are you guys with me? We're taking over!" And she works up the military peasants there, and everybody says, "Yeah, we're going with you." So it's this amazing scene with her riding the pterodactyl. So there's an example of my influence, Ryan's influence in the show. Because Carolyn is a person riding the pterodactyl of Ion. Our products come from Ion, thanks to Ion. So they show it right in the Game of Thrones. Now, did anybody see this? Anybody watching it?
No.
Not watching it. Okay.
Well, can you get it on Netflix? Can you get it on
Yes.
Fire TV Stick? Can you?
I think you can get it on Netflix. Right, Carol?
Can you stream
it? At least you can get the past episodes.
No, you can't get it on Netflix. Only HBO.
You can't get the past episodes. Well, you can go to primewire.ag, which is an illegal place, and they have a sign saying, if you come here, the National Security Agency, the CIA is going to nail you eventually. Just ignore that. That's been up there. Well, they've been doing this, never did anything, and a couple of people got a few notices saying, hey, cease and desist watching our TV shows, and you just ignore it. So, you can go to PrimeWire, PrimeWire.ag, and see any show of the last 30 years. I'll lay it out there for you, so you can catch up on Game of Thrones, or just go and look at the latest episode last Sunday. But, anyways, oh, here's someone. Definitely you have to include Alyssa. Are you watching the Game of Thrones, Alyssa, or Nate? Hey, Alyssa, Nate, fix your phone.
I gotta be on mute for a bit. I'm driving right now.
All right, so did you watch the Game of Thrones? Yes or no?
I do watch it, but I haven't seen the most recent one.
Okay, good. All right, well, let's wait till you can talk. Okay, so, who 347? That's not Eliza. Come back, is it? No, that's someone else.
No.
You want to say something?
What's his name? Yuri.
Is that you, Yuri? 347?
Yes, Bob.
Okay, we'll put you in a passive listening mode, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so back to Chad. So he had a fantastic ending to his 3 weeks here. Is there anything we want to talk about from the third dinner, Chad?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Bob was schooling Kate on the whole progression from his first appearance on the radio in 1984 all the way through to the end of the CKLN years, all woven around the Kent Perry memes.
Kent had just died. Kent had just died a few days before that.
Oh, right. So that's how it started. That's right. So before we met Bob and Carolyn for dinner, I was just sitting around that afternoon, and just to have a laugh, I pulled up some of the old CKLN recordings. And
yeah, because you were feeling nauseous or sick. Yeah, you were feeling sick, so you just wanted to just lay around. So you said, let's listen to this. So Kate heard the sample a CKLM broadcast for the first time.
Yeah.
So what happened?
It was interesting that I pulled those up. I pulled those up and listened to those, and then when we met you at the restaurant, you said, okay, what do you want to talk about? And I said, well, we were just listening to CKLN recordings, and you're like, okay, stop there. Speaking of CKLN, I just found out that Kent Perry died. Remember that?
Yeah. Yes.
So it was interesting that I decided to start listening to that. And
right,
that
the topic. And then Kate basically said, who's the church sub genius? Or she had a basic question, which led me to do a history review of the facts to give her context. Now, here's what happened. Before that, I started subtly, satirically yelling at Carolyn. And Carolyn scolded me. We heard that joke last time. Don't bring up this punching me in the face thing. We've done that. You can't use that. So Kate, Chad, and Carolyn were not putting up with my kind of aggressive humor because it was all too familiar and been done the last time we were at dinner. So I had to take a totally different tack or strategy. So I got serious and gave Kate a factual review of how she came to be.
Right, plus you weren't interrupted like you were at the other dinners, because Carolyn called in advance to make reservations and told them that there'd be a boisterous group coming in.
Chad, it went like this. I told them, I made the reservation. I said, look, find us a seat, a table that's not too close to other people, because we will disturb them. We're too loud. So I don't know if I said, and we're conducting a seminar. I don't think I said that. But so when we get there, and we don't like where they're going to put us, or we're not sure, she says, well, we have you down as a rambunctious group. So that was the apparent reason they gave us a positioning, and it was a good place. And so what led to that? What came out of that idea? You were just saying, so
but
when
also,
the waiter came.
Didn't you or Carolyn told them not to interrupt the gentleman because he's going to be giving a seminar?
Yeah, that was once we got a table, and this had never happened before. Carolyn told the waiter that we're running a seminar, so give us the water, but don't keep coming over and checking whether we like the fork or we like the napkin or whether we like his hair. We don't want to be interrupted as little as possible, or we don't want to be interrupted as much as possible. So that worked out. He was a smart waiter, and he never hung around, so we got to talk a lot and develop the themes of the day. McLuhan once called up a seminar, some academics, they were supposedly reading his book, so they said, we're reading your book, discussing your book. What's that? The medium is the massage. He said, that's not a book, that's just a smattering of quotes. So we put him down for not reading the book or not even having a book. And then he says, so what themes are you playing with today? What themes are you playing with today? Well, that's what we do here. We take themes, and if you have dinner with me, we play with themes. So the theme was, how did the Church Sub Genius and all that happened in CKLN lead to ION? So Kate got the history. Is there anything you want to say about that history, Kate?
Yeah. It was great to come from, like, to watch you say it as opposed to hearing it. Like,
yes.
Your expressions and seeing you talk about it, like, there's so much information, and you're talking so fast that, once I actually go back and listen to it, then I'll be able to, like, pinpoint the ideas that you are expressing
right to
me in person. And then I'll stick it in my head better.
Well,
but
we can't go back
really
and
cool.
listen to it. We can't go back and listen to what I said, but...
And the parts of, like, when you were first on the radio and then...
Oh, when you listen to the radio, when you listen to the old archives, yeah, right. I thought you meant our discussion. You mean the actual CKLM broadcast?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And then
yeah.
also the story that you told about the letter.
The Gerd Stern.
That was really
yes,
cool.
The great.
Yeah.
Yeah, had a great punchline that Gerd Stern's letter, that he didn't throw it away, this famous Beatnik letter, and that's a great story. It leads right up to the present. And he got vindicated by the world press after 60 years of bad reputation while he was reordering the RNA drops that very week. So that was the inner plot and message. What's this? Someone came in. Is that Jermaine? Did Jermaine come back in? get disconnected and then... I don't see anybody saying anything. Okay, so Chad, you start off pointing out that the waiter wasn't going to interrupt the story. So what did you get from it, Chad, having heard back parts of the story many times? Was there any a new aspect that came across?
Not so much in the telling of it. It was more in the way that you were able to hold a big spoonful of souffle in your hand for about 30 minutes without taking a bite of it while you're explaining end of the punchline about Garrett Stern to Kate.
Yes, I don't eat and talk at the same time.
Yeah, because I've heard most of these stories before. Kate was listening to them for the first time, so she was on the content level, and I was more on the formal level, observing you and how you were telling Kate.
Also, you'd be
maneuvers you'd make.
Right, and also you'd be interested in how Kate reacts.
Yeah.
Seeing how what
Kate was very focused. She was very focused. She was watching the whole time and listening, eyes fixed on Bob or on Bob's spoon. I noticed her look down at Bob's spoon, and I could hear her thoughts. She's like, okay, this is really interesting. I wonder if he's ever going to take a bite of that. And it's kind of like people do things normally. Like if they are eating and then they pause to talk and say a few words and then they go back to eating, it's like a social cue. It's like a nonverbal communication cue.
Yes.
But Bob is like hijacking the cue because he's got your full attention because you're waiting for him to take his next bite, but he's not going to take it.
That's great.
He's just going to lead into another like long story, sub story of the overall narrative that he's giving.
I like that.
That's a good point. That's how I hold people's attention and dominate, right? By having the, it's like someone stuttering. You're just fascinated if they're going to get the word out. Well, I'm visually stuttering by holding the food there, and you wonder whether I'm going to eat it. That keeps you involved. Yeah, well, it's very good, Chad. Certainly wasn't thought up by me. It's all instinctive.
No.
From being around for 10,000 years, I know these tricks just by habit, I guess. I don't think about them.
Yeah, you never practiced the spoon trick before.
No, and no one's ever noticed it. Carol's been with me 50 years. She never noticed it, never commented on it. Did you, Carol? You never did, but did you notice it?
I noticed it that night. I was the one that pointed it out, and we had a big laugh about it. But I don't think you've done that before, or I would have noticed it and pointed it out. I notice things.
All right.
I mean, would have. That's probably some Guinness record. I don't think anyone's ever held a big piece of souffle on their spoon for that long without eating it.
Okay, so the recording of the second dinner at the end as new young people oriented hotel. I sent that to Steve in Nova Scotia, the great Ion cynic. He calls Ion I off, not I on. Okay, so the great cynic. He's always making, attempting to snipe at me when he can. So I sent the link. So what's he write back? He says, "Hey, Chad's funnier than you."
Oh my God!
I don't know how he got that. I mean, aren't I doing all the entertaining of that recording? So he goes, "Hey, Chad's funnier than you. Good story, thanks." So then I write back. I go, "Where is he funnier than me? An absurd proposition." Okay? So he responds with, wait a minute. He says, at the very beginning, oh, wait a minute. He writes back, oh, there's two responses. He also says, in reference to the first dinner, he says, "Bob does do me, and that's in quotes. Now, that's our famous story of a guy we knew back in 68. We're sitting around, and somebody was imitating everybody. And Nolan started saying, "Do me, do me." And we all collapsed in laughter at this little guy trying to get imitated. So we have used that phrase for 50 years at certain points. So you'll hear me on CKLN every now and then go, "Do me, do me." Nobody knows what I'm saying. Now, the other part of it is Nolan is the only other guy witnessing this dialogue. Since they're old friends, he's witnessing me and Steve yell at each other the last 2 years. So Nolan sees that Steve is referring to Nolan. And Nola never commented on this. And I write back, how does that apply? How does do me? What do you mean do me? I'm actually doing everybody else. I'm not doing me. And he says, if I can get the right, he says, at the very beginning of the broadcast, when you demand that Chad, quote, tell the flock, unquote, all about your meal and how much you could eat. That was like before we get started. That was the beginning of the broadcast. Okay, tell them how you notice that's my eating abilities. And I say to him, I thought do me meant imitate me. That's how I remember the context for Nolan's outburst back in 68. So he's applying it differently. So he says, okay, now we got to go back. Since it's two threads, that was the cost restaurant thing. Now we go back to the second dinner, the one at Andes, where he says, hey, Chad's funnier than you, and I say an absurd proposition. Where is he funnier than me? And he says, I knew you couldn't let that statement stand unchallenged. I just thought he was constantly funnier than you and how he phrased things. I was impressed. So what do I say to that?
Nice, Chad.
You better just delete that comment off the face of the earth.
Why? What do you mean? Which comment? That he was impressed?
I'm funnier than you.
Yes. And so he says, I knew you couldn't let that statement stand unchallenged, so I wrote back, and I knew I would correct the record. And then I said, but Chad is impressive. He was our first friend to have a session with Ion on March 31st, 09, dash, Ion showed up on March 18th, 09. Ion has always called him number one, and he has done remarkable things with Ion's knowledge in the world of computers. So you got a little blurb there. So Steve, otherwise Steve doesn't know who you are or anything. So then he says, okay, there's two threads here. Okay, I don't get a response to that. Now we're back to the first dinner, and I'm asking him, hey, do me doesn't apply as I understand it. He goes, initially, yes, it meant being imitated. But he says, but I've broadened do me, to incorporate you telling Chad to describe your behavior as opposed to just imitating it. Okay, so that makes sense. I asked, you didn't read this properly. I didn't get it. Now I get it. Oh, yeah.
I got it right when you said that he said do me.
Yeah, no, he's brought it to not imitating but describing you. So if somebody's describing people and you want to be described, you go do me. Okay, so that fits. All right, so then what do I say to that? I go, okay, broadening accepted. Nolan should appreciate this announcement. Sorry, I go, Nolan, who's part of this dialogue, Nolan should appreciate this announcement of his acquiring tenure, so to speak. So I made up a ridiculous statement that somehow this broadening was meaning that Nolan was part of the canon. His famous imitate demand to be imitated now is expanded to doing descriptions. So I said something like that. Nolan should appreciate this announcement of his acquiring tenure, so to speak. Tenure is what you get in academia when they finally make you a full-fledged professor and they can't fire you. Okay, so then we go to... see, this, if you're still listening, Nita, this is what's so crazy. We end up all over the place, never get to the topic at hand, almost.
Does Nolan ever comment about him being commented on?
No, he doesn't say a word. And so when I said Nolan should appreciate this announcement of his acquiring tenure, so to speak, Steve writes back, yes, indeed he should. His momentary burst of excitement from almost 50 years ago has become legendary. And so I did, and I don't know if Nolan knows this, this is my first opportunity. I said, yes, the legend of Nolan is becoming even more widespread as my notoriety expands. I have told the story on the radio many times because I often yell out, do me, and then an explanation is asked for. So we're letting Nolan know that he's becoming a household word. And, you know, we've got 1,000 years to build this up, right, since we're not going to die. We just take our time making it. Kent Perry will become a household word, because Kent, I had 2 years of fun with him, because I would hang around after Mike went home, after doing the 2 hours with Mike Dyer, and we'd play stuff, and I'd listen to him and argue with people on the phone, and I got 2 years of memories of him. He's like the main guy for me at CKLN, other than Mike. So, of course, a week before he died, I got word that he had been diagnosed with cancer in the bone. So I said, listen, we have something called RNA drops. I don't know how much he was aware of it. I'll send you a free bottle. You could try it. We don't make claims. But he never responded, and then he was dead a week later. So he failed to get the drops. Okay, so then
interrupt here for a moment. Yeah, that's kind of like when you guys did that to me. When you guys offered me the free bottle, and I never got it.
And yeah, that was one of the biggest mistakes of your life.
I went through all these different things, and I'm how many years later back on the phone.
Yeah, it's good. Like, you paid your dues, you paid your karma, you need 3 years of distraction and pain until you are worthy of having a second chance. So that's the old way of looking at it, the old religious way. We don't look at it that way, but we can joke with it. Okay,
Is there a website? What's the website for ION?
ION and Bob, one word, ionandbob.com.
Okay.
Ionandbob.com, and you can look under Radio ION with all the archives, and it'll take you from the most recent, and as you scroll down, you'll see certain hours have a black print ION with brackets. Those are the hours you can hear ION. It's all marked out for you.
Okay. Well, you know, I enjoyed speaking with you guys. Thank you. I am going to take a nap. But thank you for having me on and helping me out with some information. And
okay. And if you take the product, you can call in Carolyn's show on Mondays, and she'll discuss whatever effects you got from it.
Yeah, I talked to her once before in the class, but I'm just coming back on, so.
Okay, good. Well, nice to meet you again. Now that you're ready.
Okay. All right.
All right, goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. So when I wrote that the legend of Noland is becoming more widespread, he wrote back, rarely is Steve positive in relation to what I'm doing. He goes, that's great. So he's happy about that. And then, let's see, is there a follow-up any more on that topic on Chad? He did send me, Chad, an interview, a BBC show that Germaine Greer did back in 2006 on Zappa, her great respect for Zappa. She's the famous original archetype of the second wave of feminism. She wrote a book in the early 70s called The Female Eunuch, which sparked a lot of feminist stuff. Then she got ripped off by the media and then became a professor, but she met Zappa by accident in the 70s, became a good friend of Frank and Gail, and always has written great things about him. So it's a pretty interesting documentary about Frank, retrospect on him. Maybe I'll send that to you, Chad, if you don't find it somewhere.
Look, all right. All right.
Okay, what else? I think that may be the end of the Chad topic. The Chad topic of what Steve's saying. So he was very impressed with you. Oh yeah, look at this. Here's what Chad, we have posted this around the alley. Chad wrote to Carolyn, our Maui experience was beyond perfect, due in large part to you and Bob. Kate said, quote, now normal people are really going to seem like bottom feeders after hanging out with Bob and Carolyn. End of quote. And then Chad says, I second that. Well, I forward that to Steve. And he wrote, good to see. Good to see that, Chad. It's good to see that you were happy and appreciated Bob and Carolyn. Okay, so
now
back
Kate
to this.
Kate has to clean up that comment I made when I told her that I sent that to Carolyn.
Yeah.
She actually has to correct what I said because she said it a bit differently. There was more detail. What did you say, Kate? Something about...
said it when we were like, it was our last time bobbing around in the ocean. So I just said that, after hanging out with Bob and Carolyn, they're like the kings of the sea. They're like the orcas of the sea. And we were like the dolphins that got to hang out with them. And now when we go back to Canada, it's like we have to go hang out with all the shrimp that are at the bottom of the sea.
The shrimp.
So, were the orca, How are we the orcas? I don't know much about orcas. That's a kind of whale?
Yeah.
Are they special? Special whale?
I guess so. I just said the whales because they go there and they hang out in Maui in that bay, right? So, they're, you know,
are they big, Carolyn?
Yeah, well, whales are big, so we got the whales, and then we got the dolphins, and then we got the shrimp.
Right.
So you get the analogy from that, I'm sure.
I think, Kate, though, Kate, you were referring, you meant to say those are whales that are in Maui Bay, right? You just didn't know what they were called,
yeah.
So you're calling them orcas. I think orca is like a Canadian native way of saying whale or something.
Oh, I see, yeah. They're usually called humpback, right, Carolyn? They're humpback whales.
Yeah, that's right. Right, right.
And
that's what you meant, right, Kate? The ones that Bob and Carolyn look at?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they, so orca might be applicable. I don't know if the orcas come here.
No.
Carolyn says no. So,
okay.
Well, that's a good update. Yeah, you're bobbing with Bob in the sea, the five-bodied sea. You know, there's the chemical bobbing, the astral bobbing, the ship body and TV body and mystery landscape. Four or five kinds of bobbing. Hey, we have a new slogan here. Hey, Ted, are you on the new McLuhan group with the academics? Have you looked at that? Didn't you even post on there?
I haven't gone and looked at it. No, I just get notifications when there's a new message.
Oh, okay, because they've already, the leader of it, I think he's the leader, he's one of them, says, he's there saying, I think we better get rid of Bob. Droves of people have left when I showed up. Droves of academics. and I'm tempted to post Chad's comment, you know. But what's his name? Brian, who does the McLuhan Library stuff, Brian Taylor, often known as Mini Max, he's gone on there, and already he made a statement explaining me to them, and he was almost assassinated, but he wiggled out of it. And so I'm not posting any right now. I'm trying to look like I'm responsible. Because Brian was told, there's no discussing of Bob around here. He was quoting my father. Please, let's not talk about Bob. Of course, they can't really hold it back. But Alex just said, no talking about Bob. This is about Marsha McLuhan. That's all. And Bob can form his own website if he wants people, you know, what do you call that? People suck up to you?
Groupies?
Groupies, but there's another more respectable phrase. Sycophants. Yeah, and Bob's sycophants. You can go over and play with Bob and his website, but we're not having that here. So after he said that, I posted 54 McLuhan quotes. 54 beautiful laid out. Just to show them, look, you guys want to talk about McLuhan. Here's where, look at this. How's this? Discuss. 50 amazing quotes, all laid out in order, thematically ordered, and I implied discuss, but nobody did. Everybody ignored it. Roxy even said, I think they deleted them all, Bob. And I went and looked, and no, they hadn't deleted them. She just forgot where they were. But the then I posted Dave Neufeld's explanation. We might read that if Chad runs out of material. I'll read what Neufeld said on there. And, of course, that made Alex really mad, what Neufeld said. Maybe we should read what Brian said. But okay, Chad, what did you get from all this being here? I don't know if there's anything more to say about the restaurant. It was a sober restaurant. It wasn't raucous laughter. A little bits of laughter, but it's a serious education of Kate to find out how what's the context of all this. And with the exciting story of Gerd Stern's letter, that was really great to talk that. Mm-hmm. So that's that dinner, right? Oh, didn't we do some funny things with the waiter at the end or something?
Well, I hugged him goodbye because he was so good about not waitering to us.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about the dinner and how Kate got introduced to several pounds of lobster.
Well, you can talk about that. Or Chad can.
Or Kate.
How about Kate talks about it? Because I didn't eat any. It was the best. It was the greatest dinner I ever watched. It looked delicious.
Yeah,
but I just want to say one last thing, though, is the pattern I took from it was just the constant fire hose of words that comes out of Bob's mouth. It's just nothing can stop it. Nothing.
And it's all worthwhile listening to. It has a point.
Yeah.
I mean, basically.
And then you met. Oh yeah, Kate commented on this too. She said, Bob will mention someone, like some name of a famous person will come up or a historical person comes up in the conversation, and there's always some way that Bob knows them or knows someone who knows them. Or was,
yeah.
Like when, you know, you're talking about Gerd Stern and his connections to the beat guys like Cassidy and Kerouac and Ginsberg.
Yes.
Just nobody you can bring up that Bob isn't like 2 degrees of separation away from.
That's right. In the 20th century, that's true. So you notice that, Kate. Very good. So Kate, what are we going to talk about?
The lobster.
Oh yeah, the lobster. Which you had never had it like that before.
No,
right?
Never. I've only had it like it's already been, prepared on top of a salad or something like that. But so I didn't know what to expect. So when Carolyn said, "Oh, do you want lobster?" You know, of course I'm going to try it. So when it comes out, I was just like blown away how big it was and like the flavor of it. Like, does it always taste that good, or is that just we just have some special lobster?
So it was very sweet. Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. We each had 2 1-pound lobsters. I found it to be one of the best since Nova Scotia. So yeah, we lucked out.
Where do they get the lobster from, Carolyn? It's not Nova Scotia lobster, right?
It could be, because they look like Nova Scotia lobster.
So they have to go to certain parts of the world to get it. It has
to
be shipped.
Yeah.
And so, Carolyn, when she goes to a restaurant, if there is a potential lobster, that's what she has. She's a lobster maniac. I don't do it because it's too awkward picking apart the shells and all that, but she's very good at it. So she showed Kate how to do it, right, how to get the meat out of the shells. Did you do that, Carol?
Well, I just told her to watch what I do, but yeah, a lot of people don't know about the legs, how you can you can sort of bite and suck the meat out of the legs. They just throw them away, but yeah, I make an art of it.
I think I just had a mess all over me, like butter everywhere, but I just sat there like slurping and sucking on this lobster, staring at Bob, talking.
Yeah. And I'm so into my story, I didn't even notice you eating anything. See, I'm looking at your astral something. I'm looking at your being's response to what I'm saying, not at the visible details. Like, I don't recall you sucking or anything. I didn't even notice you were fucking eating a lobster. Can you observe that, Chad? Did you notice that Bob didn't notice anything visibly while totally enraptured in his explanation? How could you interpret that since you observed me?
Maybe. I don't know if someone who's new to seeing you would be able to pick up on it, but I can notice what you're tuned into, and you definitely weren't tuned into, like, the ambient visuals. You're
right.
Using, you know, looking someone in the eye when you want to communicate with them, but that was about it.
And I guess I'm listening intently to my thoughts as they pour out. Yeah, I'm very, very attentive to what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. You're not really there.
I'm not there visually. I'm there acoustically and tactile, very tactile. Do you know what that means, Kate? Do you have a tactile effect when I'm talking to you?
Actually, no. I mean,
okay.
when you're talking, like you didn't eat as much on the at the third restaurant because you were talking more. You really were like giving a seminar.
Yeah.
So when you, like, were holding that fork with the piece of souffle on it for, like, half an hour, like, your hand just didn't move. Like, it was in one spot. Like, your eyes were the only things that, and your mouth were the only thing that were moving. Like, you're blinking and your mouth's moving, but everything else is, like, still. So, like, I'm hypnotized, like, while I watch you talk. And so I'm, like, eating and hypnotized watching you.
Yeah, it's like I'm being a conscious medium. The thoughts are just coming to me. It's partly a psychic thing I do there, I've noticed through the years. That's why I'm like immobile, like a medium would be almost, and not there physically. I'm in some kind of abstract space and listening to what he said and thinking about what I'm saying and then how it relates to you or Chad. So, and I'm totally oblivious that I'm holding the fork. I didn't even notice that I'm holding a fork because I'm not involved with eating. So I am in a kind of...
Don't you think that's...
Don't you think that's part of the radio effects too, Bob?
No, I'm doing this in person. I don't know.
No, I know, but you've...
No, I was like that before I went on the radio. Right, Carolyn? I've always been like that. Yeah. Many times. A common thing over the last 50 years, people go up to dinner with me, eventually they say, eat, Bob, eat. They can't stand me sitting there talking or interacting or listening and not eating.
Or we're waiting for dessert.
Oh, that's right. They're waiting for Bob's fucking up the dinner by... you're not on fucking... Get off mute, Carol. Do it again.
Or Bob doesn't realize he has to finish his main course before they'll bring dessert.
That's great.
And of course... I do know more now, but back then, I never ordered food. I knew nothing about it. Carol would just order whatever she wanted and thought I would get. You have to realize I have no knowledge of cuisine, other than a little bit now.
Bob had a filet.
Yeah, filet mignon. I often go with a filet mignon.
And along with that bread, remember that Italian bread they brought out?
Oh, man, that was gross. But it also shows you I'm not involved with food. I ate volumes of the bread that Carol says you're not supposed to eat because you'll fill yourself up. But it doesn't fill me up, right, Carol? I ate the whole plate, and I got the guy to bring another plate before I had my filet mignon. So.
No, Bob, we disproved that.
Well, what happened?
At the first dinner, you ate so much bread that you had to do the takeout bag for the rest of your meal. You've never done that.
Okay.
And you implored me, Carolyn, if I do that again and start eating all the bread, remind me not to so that I can join my meal. Oh, okay, Bob, I'll do that. And then we had a big fight at the second dinner when I told the waiter not to bring more bread, and you demanded it. And that was even before you threatened to punch me in the face.
Yes. But I had a lot of bread in the second meal, right?
No, not as much.
But I insisted on having some.
What you did with the second plate of bread was saved it until after your main meal, and you had it as dessert.
Good call.
I had bread for dessert.
Before we placed the five desserts on the table, and then you had two more desserts.
Yeah, then I had even more desserts. Yes, that's the famous picture. My ID picture now is me fascinated and hypnotized by the non-strawberries before I realized it. And the little, what are they? I don't even know what they are. Fudge, chocolate fudge or something, Carol? What were those little squares?
Yeah, what was it, Kate? Was it another mini? Oh, yeah.
It was, wasn't that the chocolate cream pie or cream cheesecake?
Chocolate cheesecake. Yeah, chocolate cheesecake.
Okay, yeah.
Come to think of it, I don't think I've ever had a chocolate cheesecake before. Usually it's yellow.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So what happened in the third restaurant? Why did I eat a lot of bread in the third restaurant and violated all that I'd told you to do before?
Because the bread in the third restaurant.
It had jalapeno and cheese all over it.
It was so good.
Pizza.
That restaurant, everything they gave us was fantastic. We almost decided that's the best restaurant ever. It wasn't a shame. Dad missed all this. But no, the lobster, you guys had lobster, but I loved everything. The bread was so tasty because they had put extra something in it, and so that's why I kept getting more. So I totally forgot that I told Carol to hold back in the bread because it was a new experience, right? I would have been happy just eating bread all night, Carol. It was so good.
Yeah, and it didn't seem to bother me, so I didn't even notice it.
You didn't warn me.
I didn't feel I had to police you.
Right, because it was so good.
I didn't have anything.
Let's talk about how, Bob, you get into the zone, because I feel like that's pretty relevant and interesting. It's like the you being ahead of yourself.
Yes.
It's the merging of the multiple bodies. It really brings up the omnipresence is disappearance to me, because there's a sense that you're slipping into some other place. And
okay, look at this way. Finish your sentence.
How I get there is because words being frequency is some sort of interesting acoustical focus. And because there's simultaneity and timelessness with acoustics, with reverberation and frequency, so you're able to, like, lock in acoustically, but yet it doesn't matter really what's around you visually.
Right. Okay, on a more mundane level, this is what I'm doing. I'm aware of what I've done. I can almost remember every day for the last 180 years, whatever it's been, 90 years. I can't remember my childhood exactly, but I can remember a lot of since I came to the States in 1953, 54, so that's 60 years. And I use music to remember stuff. I've done that for years. I would always listen to oldie stations, and I would... It wasn't that I was a great fan of oldies. I liked it, but it was no big deal. I would use it to remember people, remember what I was doing when that music happened. So I've always been building up my memory. So, and I have a sense that what I'm doing has been important. So if we're going to talk about me, I'm going to give you the historical record, how it happened, and why it's significant to me and should be significant to you. So I'm always being a historian of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
When Kate goes, so what is J.R. Bob Dobbs? That requires an incredible history of how it even became into my awareness and how it started and this and that. And I will tell that story, which takes a long time. And if the person is reasonably smart, they will listen. They will shut up and listen because you'll get very startling conclusions, like the fact that GERD had this historical justification of the fact he didn't lose Jack Neil Cassidy's letter, and he was getting it with the RNA drop. So I'm always concluding it to the present point I'm trying to make about why I'm significant, and you should be listening to me. So we're going to always now talk about ion and the RNA drops. So we go back and review the whole history of CKLN to show how it illustrates ion. So I am giving the record. So when you talk to Michael Blake Reed, he goes in trance, and you're talking to the Evergreens, they are correcting the record. So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to show the importance of what I have to say and why I've lived. So it can be called megalomania, but it is pleasant, the patterns I come up with.
Right. And it's a God-like way to... what was
be accurate
term?
With your words. I'm going to be accurate with my words.
It's something about the victory of the archive. That was like something that that article somebody posted, and to me it's like when you talk about the managing the hologram, you know, it's also all of that kind of melding
the
together.
The word that makes the market. Reading more Thompson, he's pretty good on that. He talks about he says 100 years ago when the worker, well, the 19th century, they were moved off the rural lands, they were obsolete, so they moved to the ghettos and the cities, and then they found themselves in a factory looking at another working guy, and they realized, holy shit, there's hundreds of us, millions of us all around the world, factory workers. So then that started the socialist communist movement. So then, so that was the hardware communism, the shared environments of the 19th century. So then he says, the baby boomer kids found themselves collectivized in universities and in suburbs. In the informational culture of the 1560s, and they looked at each other and realized, holy shit, we're a different kind of people. Where we have a different reference point than our parents. We're victims of the generation gap, and we are available all over the world. Let's start something. So that's how the counterculture started. And so he's saying that the software communism of the 60s created a different kind of workers' movement, basically an information-addicted movement that led into the Internet. But it's a good pattern. The workers looked around and said, holy shit, we're here in these factories, and we could get together and take over. Well, then the kids felt that in the software communism of the 60s. It's just another good pattern. Since you're reading Thompson, I'm bringing it up.
It's great. Yeah.
Now you've got the Transforming History book from 2009, the shorter one with the yellow beige cover.
It is a paperback, and it's only got 200-ish pages.
Oh no, no, that's the one. The newer one, 2009, has 157 pages, and that's a smaller book. The bigger one has 200 and something. So you maybe have
I have the 2001 version.
Well, that's good. Well, I've reviewed the 2009, and there's a lot of the same repeat, but he changes some points. So there's some points in here that aren't in the first book, and then he has some good charts at the back, which I'll be posting soon. So there is a...
Oh, in the 2009 version?
Yeah, and if you're a completist for Thompson, you would get this book, because he presents the whole curriculum a bit differently.
Oh. Oh,
so there's a lot of repeat.
Yeah, no, I'll get
that. It's interesting. So, so we were talking about Kate and me being in semi-trance. I call it conscious mediumship. And there's a whole series with Andrew Crystal, if you want to hear it, on Vimeo, I think, or on the timeline of us analyzing what is conscious mediumship.
Great phrase.
Right. So who was it... What is that? Let me check that. Somebody's distorting themselves. Okay, so we've got lots of people here. Madeline, and maybe Nate's come in, and Sarah, a little Sarah. And then we have, Kate. Now, Chad's dropped off. No, Chad's here. So what were we talking about, Chad? We're going to do something else? We finished Kate's, she evoked this conscious medium thing. So, Chad, what do you make of this Maui world? What would you say in overview of what you got out of this trip?
It's like a theme park devoted to Slack and Bob and Carolyn and Ion.
Nice. Yes, I agree. And
I had a dream. Sorry, I had a dream of that exact environment like 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I had a dream that this is when I was listening and not participating yet. I had a dream that I like went to see you guys and it was like a total amusement park environment. And people were like all around. There were different like seminars happening, different this and that, a lot of Slack, a lot of just whatever. It's funny you say that now. Anyway. Moving on.
You're saying, did you just say, it's funny you say that, addressing Chad? You said, funny he says that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, a lot of people, Inez, have had dreams of the environment here in some way. We create a sense of a unique thing here that people dream about or actually travel here and experience it. So, yeah, Chad, they say 144,000 people live on Maui, so there's some range of that with the tourists. So you're saying it's all for Bob and Carol and Ion, this Maui thing.
Yeah, it really has that veneer, that glaze over it, and also emanating from its essence as well. It's super slack. There's just nothing serious about it at the core. Like even driving around listening to the Hawaiian native music on the radio,
yeah,
so like loose and flowy, and there's nothing serious about it. It's kind of a little bit silly.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we walk around, I know most people are on vacation, so they're in a better mood. But even still, the locals, it's just everybody seems happier than in a normal, like, mainland city.
Flats in Paradise?
Do that again, Alyssa?
Oh, it just reminds me of, is it Flats in Paradise that kept coming up from
isn't
the
that, But isn't that, like, a crazy place? That's just,
oh, is
I
it?
Remember that as, like, full of crazy people. Have you seen the movie?
Is it crazy? I've seen it once.
No, I wouldn't say Maui's like that at all.
Alyssa only saw it once. It wasn't enough for her to register anything. She got to watch it a couple times, hey, Alyssa, before you know what the movie's about.
No, I know what the movie's about, but I guess there's that commercial that you're referring to where they do seem kind of crazy when they're really like, we're going there. Yeah.
What's that? What's the movie has a commercial or something separate?
It's in the movie.
Fifth Element.
Oh, it's in the movie, this commercial.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really anything like that, but it's your own
interpretation, another thing, Jed, another thing is that you never, in this place, I don't think any place has as many fireworks going off. There's always fireworks because big corporations come in, they buy up the place for a week, they bring in a big band, you know, U2, or they bring in Zappa or somebody, Dweezil Zappa, and then they end it off with all these fireworks. So that's interesting that there's always fireworks going off because that's metaphorically have a lot of orgasmic releases. Ian probably could do a lot on fireworks. But the... that's right, Carolyn. I hadn't thought of that before, but there's always fireworks happening. It's pretty interesting.
It's always X Day.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's always X Day. The time is X Day.
The X's have definitely landed.
That's right, and you've got Ion happening all the time. The X's have landed. It's totally. If Stang and them could get out of their stupor and realize, they'd be marveled. They could even compliment themselves and say, holy shit, we predicted it. But they're so fucked up they can't enjoy the fucking rich metaphor that's going on here that was laid out in the Book of the Subgenius.
And Hawaii is like...
Hey, Bob.
Just a minute, Chad, say something.
On.
Go ahead.
Hawaii's like the dream. Hawaii's like the dreamscape paradise of the United States. Not a lot of other countries have that. They don't have a gap between normal life and having something to aspire to. It's like dreamland that we're all aware of as Americans, and we can go there one day and kiss it goodbye and then go back to work, right?
Yeah, they have the phrase the American dream. They don't have the Czechoslovakian dream or the German dream
exactly.
or the Chinese dream. I never thought of it before.
I mean, like, the United States is the only real country left, that the only one that's kept up with the five bodies.
Yeah,
and they even have a place for, they even have a place for someone who's, beyond the five bodies to go and live. It's like Hawaii, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, in other countries, like Canada doesn't have any kind of paradise to go to. It's got a place called Hell, which is what they refer to Fort McMurray as, which is burning now.
Yeah.
So the fact that the U.S. has that kind of a place, like a Shangri-La, and that you and Carolyn live there and you talk to Ion from Hawaii, it's just all perfect. It's like the perfect ending to the moving through the five bodies and then going above the Android meme of the United States.
That's right. It's
dreamland.
It's highest aspiration. Realization. Perfect realization conclusion of the subgenius mythology.
Mm-hmm. This makes me wonder if the atmosphere at Hawaii is what the atmosphere the rest of the world is going to be turning into. Like, is that place ahead of what?
Yeah, maybe.
It's like holding a frequency, and then we're all going to resonate with that.
Did you say closing a frequency?
Holding
a frequency.
Holding.
Yes, holding a frequency.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's notable, Bob, and it seems kind of fractally, that Hawaii has 144,000 inhabitants.
Yes, that's the archetypal number. That's right. I was amazed at that when I first read it when we first got here. Holy shit. Because 144,000 was a big number in cosmic awareness land, too. And remember, Rai returned to essence in one of the Hawaiian islands. That's what Ralph Dube came to in 66, tried to run a cult. Did it for a year and then had a whole bunch of heart attacks and died on January 22nd, 1967, 1:22. I think it's a week after the human being in San Francisco. So, and that was the March
That's when I was conceived.
On that day?
Well, probably January 26th.
Really? Well, that's pretty good. And 67?
Yes.
Ah, well, that could explain a lot about your mental state or something. Yeah, you should think about that. Go read about January 67, all that was going on that month in the world.
Yeah.
See what attracted you. If you think that something in here is attracting the essence to be, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Now, there was another point there. So here it is. this famous mythology out of cosmic awareness about the original separateness, Rai, comes to Hawaii and can't run its cult, just collapses in on itself because it can't do that cult, that ancient principality theme, in the Hawaiian environment. So it happens here on the great day, not just 22, but 122, January 22nd. And then, 40 years later, 41 years later, going into the 42nd year, which is the magic number in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I interviewed Dave Worster for the first time about what is Rai, define it and explain it, and that get published in Paranoia magazine. And it may have been one of the last issues of Paranoia as a hard copy thing, because Joan of Arc moved it to the digital or just gave up on it because it was too irrelevant. But it got discussed. The Rai Return to Essence, once I was here. So I interviewed Dave Worster from the place that Rai Return to Essence. And then it got published, and that's the first time the public ever saw the word R-H-Y-E-E. And then Ian shows up 9 months later, maybe 7 months later, and because I think I talked to Dave in August 2008, but the date would be on the interview in the archives, Ian shows up, and then I get to redo Rai, the original separateness, as a joke. And that's why I call myself Rai on dupes. And then Chad gets all carried away. I have to discipline Chad because he starts fucking acting out Rai on some level. What was that about, Chad?
I don't know why, because I moved to the castle.
Something about the castle, maybe. Yeah, and everybody was...
The whole thing with the symbols and ending up in the castle.
Yeah, and everybody started putting Chad on a pedestal. They took the number one thing, literally. Yeah, and I remember scolding the movement in that direction. Chad didn't even know what I was talking about. What do you mean? I'm not trying to be right. Anyways, it was a joke thing. But so that all happened here. See, it even fits metaphorically. And Ian was around us in the year before, Ian said, trying to see if they would attach themselves to us, and basically waiting till we got to Maui to make the theater accurate. We had to get to Dobbstown before Ian would show up. And he shows up exactly 9 months, like pregnancy, after we arrive. Timing is great.
Hey, Bob, you know how you always say that Ion's like a pterodactyl over you and Carolyn?
Yes.
Well,
did you hear me talk
the whole time we were... Yeah,
what did you notice?
I'm just extending. We noticed that there's like a cloud. There's always a cloud over Haleakala, it seems.
Yes, yes. Where we are, where
there's
we
like
live, over our mountain.
Yeah, looming there over top of where you guys are. It's like, could that be the cloud that Ion talks about?
Good point. Yeah, because what happens is it's always sunny in the morning. And beautiful. And then at noon hour, the weather makes clouds start flowing over Haleakala, which goes over our place. So we get the cloud. And where Chad was in other parts of Hawaii don't get that cloud. Right, Chad?
Hmm. Right.
And the cloud, it's nice. It's a break from the constant sun. It's not a bad phenomenon. And it breaks up and drifts around, and it's not a big problem. But it's unique to where we are. I hadn't thought of that. Yes, the cloud. Clouds over us. Yes, what else were we talking about? Did we finish? We were going to go in. Oh, yeah, we were explaining why Maui is so appropriate, and you see the meaning of it. Anything else you want to say about it? Like, what happened to you and Kate?
We just got really, really relaxed, and our bodies love being there. I went in the water. Most of the time, I go in twice a day. For an hour,
yeah.
Or two, floating around in the water.
Right, we talked about that previously. Now, did you get better in the two extra days you had?
Yeah, I did. I got better like in the day after Friday, the day after.
So you went in the water a couple times.
Yeah,
more.
I went in the water. Yeah, I went in on Saturday and Sunday as much as we could.
And that's why you missed payday. You fell asleep.
Yeah, I was tired out from swimming.
And then Sunday is your birthday? You're a Gemini?
The whole thing with getting the extra days and the flight and everything, that was like my birthday present from Ion.
Right. May 28th. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else is to say? What do you object to, Madeline? Where are we screwing up here? What are you unhappy about? You won't even speak.
Are you screwing up, Bob?
No, we're waiting for your impression, your interpretation of what's going on here. Usually you have a questioning, skeptical slant, or you're just not getting it and you're dissatisfied.
Oh, come on. Now I am, because I object to that, on
Stigma.
Some days I'm like that, and on other I'm not into this.
I knew I'd make you object to something. See, now I got you objecting.
I resemble that remark. No,
yes, you resemble that remark. You do.
My impression is that I'm jealous as fuck.
Did you say jealous as fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about Madeline. She doesn't hide her emotions. She allows the negative emotions to be in her. She doesn't deny that she's jealous. That's your problem. You're too honest
that's
with
good.
Yourself. Yeah, try a little denial there, Madeline.
Try a little passive
yeah.
aggression.
Yeah, start evading your emotions. Get fake. Start becoming slightly phony.
Get fake.
Yeah, get fake.
Oh, yeah, you know, you're right. I have like an allergy to that.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's why you.
I am.
That's why you live and work in the underground, the underbelly of society, building up props to entertain other people's evasions. You're actually creating evasions for other people.
Oh, and I'm so aware of it. It makes me ill. It's like the fancy hotel. Not the theater part. I love that. But the hotels, it's so funny because they are disgusting. Like, I work in the most glamorous hotels in this city. And you go behind that veneer, and there's cockroaches and all kinds of nastiness.
So you object to people being deluded.
You know, not, mildly, but delusion is one thing. I don't like putting on...
You don't like faking.
Right.
You've never been able to fake an orgasm. That's why you're not married, right?
Yeah,
I'm
that's
thinking
why
about
I'm
it.
Not married. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
This is entertainment here. I'm always leading edge. I try to come up with the most violent, silly things, violent and silly things
Faking
to say.
Faking orgasms doesn't get you real ones, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. I just said it. This is incomplete. Don't fucking analyze my thinking. So just simulation. I'm not in control right now. I'm not in trance. I'm not telling a story. I'm just repartee.
Repartee.
You know that word? French for gossiping.
Yes, basically. I know that word. I know that word.
Yeah, you know that word? Yeah. Madeline,
yes,
isn't that a French?
You.
Do you know that your name is a big theme in Proust's famous book, Remembers of Things Past, where he discovers the Madeline triggers his smell?
Yeah, me and the Madeline, we're both delicious and buttery.
Yeah, and hate hypocrisy. Or cover-up. Well, that's what you are. You may have become the Madeline. You remember too much. Remember the facts too much. So I didn't know that. The hotels have all these cockroaches hidden away and nobody sees them?
Oh, yeah.
Well, why do the cockroaches keep out of the way? Why do they go along with that?
Well, they don't entirely.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that veneer is... It's a funny thing. Well, it's like the veil, I guess. You know, there's nothing between this upper crust and
you know, the nitty gritty that the lower class lives in, right? Mm.
There is a veneer. There is a veil, you're saying.
It is, but it's so thin. It's like, you know, the gilded hallways and the mint on the pillow is inches away from, you know, decades-old linoleum and garbage. And
is that right?
It's just, yeah, the distance is nothing. And yet the experience of the folks patronizing the hotel is so different from the people working in it.
Yeah, yeah. So,
it's just, you know, it's two different worlds separated by a layer of gold paint.
Yeah, so the 20th century has been the aristocratization of the working class. They're here to have a special experience, and tourism does that. And so you work your butt off. You could even be working at a hotel, and then you take 2 weeks off, and you go to Maui to a nice hotel, and then you're pampered for a week or probably just a week. The pampering is what's happened to the working class. They've never had that. That might be the utopia of the 20th century. The growth of everybody can have an aristocratic special experience. They can be pampered. And, you know, they seem to, I think they, you could say they expect it. They're kind of spoiled about it. They don't bug anybody on their vacation. Like, I have to walk gingerly through these tourists, you know. Then they walk around, they are not that aware of you walking by them. They will bump into you. They're in a trance. You know what I mean? They're feeling their oats of, I can walk and I'm in charge and nobody's going to interrupt me. There's sometime. Though, in Maui, though, people are in a good mood, so they aren't rude. I'm just like Madeline. I'm looking for the slightest bullshit. I'm detecting the veneer all the time. You guys, I tell the little kids they're fucking deluded. I tell everybody. And I get a chance. It's not like what you think it is. Matter of fact, Maui is a very dangerous place underneath. Much, you know, people breaking their necks in the waves, accidents. You always see every day someone limping along with a cast on or something on their arm. You know, they
seems
come for
like
the great...
Seems like Boston Paradise.
Yeah, they come for the great aristocratic pampered vacation and they get hurt. What do you have anything to say about that, Carol? They don't announce too much of the murders and violence that goes on here and there. But I certainly don't know about it. Maybe there is no murders, but I don't know. I've detected something going on that's not being talked about. They won't even warn the tourists that, hey, don't swim the day after it rains. There's no signs to warn people. They don't want to imply any negative. So the very thing that you're talking about, Madeline, I live in that environment day to day. The veneer of fraudulence. But people are stoned on the Maui vibe. So it's not a big issue that everybody's being a phony. It is in boring, dull, negative San Francisco. That's when you don't have any environment to it. You don't have another frequency to help you ignore the raw facts. Are you with me, Madeline?
Right.
The
nature component of it is tremendous, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the ocean and that isn't big in the environment to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Okay, so Chad, we only got a minute or so. What's a closing
statement? What are
you talking
about? We have the ocean.
Yeah, but it's
the
cold.
The ocean has an anti-environment.
It's not
the... I associate San Francisco with cold water compared to L.A.
Yeah. Cold and cold.
I don't know if Chad's still here. Chad, do you have a closing remark?
asked how perfect Maui is. I'm sounding repetitive, but I mean, like, the water temperature there is perfect. The water temperature here in Vancouver is pretty cold. You can only swim in it in July and August. The air temperature in Maui is perfect. smells really nice. There's flowers everywhere. It's a visual piece for the eyes. It's very soothing.
Hey, Chad.
Yum.
Now, let me. Here's the alternative message. Remember we went on Dr. Sinister's Synesthesia show and we talked about RNA drops, you know, the subgenius Stang world?
Yeah.
You know what I heard him say one week? He hates Hawaii. That sums up their stupid attitude. They got to be so different. Yeah. They hate paradise. Just to be different, just to be ornery.
Oh, man, that would suck if I went to Hawaii and hated it.
Yeah.
That's like, all right, forget it. I'm just incorrigible.
you would be justified in killing yourself at that point, Madeline.
At that point, yeah, just might as well.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Hey,
are you
on the line? We can keep talking. Thanks a lot, Chad and Kate.